From Uniontown to Williamsport, Erie to York, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, Pennsylvania's Attorney General is one of a number of state attorneys general who have filed antitrust action against Google. Pete Sepp from the National Taxpayers Union is here to explain the potential impact on consumers. Special Unit 66 provides critical search and rescue services in Lebanon County and beyond. To learn more, Joe Geiger has Mark Saladay in the Community Benefit Spotlight. And the flow of illegal immigrants at the southern border has become a national security crisis. On this week's Lincoln Radio Journal commentary, Emily Green from Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania says the solution is tall fences and wide gates. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to Pete Sepp of the National Taxpayers Union in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. The governor's office has released its annual report on state spending, and it shows that spending on health and human services consumes 65% of total general fund spending. That represents a 63% increase in inflation-adjusted spending over the past 17 years. The state now spends $24.1 billion per year. That spending includes expanded Medicaid coverage and the Children's Health Insurance Program. During COVID, many were allowed to participate in such programs, even though they did not meet eligibility requirements. That policy ended in March of last year. Efforts to move this year's presidential primary to an earlier date on the calendar to give voters in Penns Woods more of a say in the presidential nomination process failed as lawmakers could not agree on a new date. Now, they're getting an early start on moving the date of the 2028 presidential primary. State Representative Keith Greiner of Lancaster County is proposing to move the 2028 presidential primary from the fourth Tuesday in April to the third Tuesday of March, which would be March 21st in 2028. We'll keep you posted. This year's contest for a U.S. Senate seat in Pennsylvania is already promising to be one of the most expensive in the nation. Republican Dave McCormick, who has a clear path to his party's nomination, reported an eye-popping $5.4 million in the fourth quarter of 2023. That is more than his opponent, incumbent U.S. Senator Robert P. Casey Jr., has ever raised in one quarter. McCormick has plunked an additional $1 million of his own money into the campaign treasury. The U.S. Senate is now almost evenly divided, with 51 Democrats or independents who caucus with the Democrats and 49 Republicans. One-third of the Senate is up for election this year, with twice as many Democrat as Republican seats in play. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. The Biden administration is very active in filing antitrust actions against various tech companies, including Google. And a number of attorneys general from across the country have joined in the suit. The outcome will have a profound impact on consumers. Here to explain the issue and why taxpayers should be concerned is Pete Sepp. He is president of the National Taxpayers Union. Pete, welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. Pete, a number of attorneys general around the country are involved in a major lawsuit with Google. Of course, there are a lot of lawsuits floating around out there these days. Tell us a bit about this particular suit.
This lawsuit actually began in 2020 as two federal and state lawsuits against Google alleging various parts of anti-competitive behavior and violations of antitrust laws. And the case was combined, and of course, Pennsylvania's Attorney General, Michelle Henry, is involved in this case. And the case centers originally around seven different contentions by the Department of Justice at the federal level and more than 38 state attorneys general now. The judge in the case, Judge Mehta, last year, right before it went to trial, narrowed the government's charges from 7 to 3. In other words, he threw out 4 of the charges because they were effectively spurious. I mean, they were frivolous charges, including one by Google's competitors that their search results were being displayed improperly in Google's own platform. The judge pretty much decided that that was laughable and got rid of it. The remaining charges center around primarily whether Google's search engine is being preloaded onto other devices, primarily Apple devices, through an agreement that effectively constitutes a monopoly. And that charge is really the central contention that both sides argued over during the latter part of 2023. The case has now been presented and is in the judge's hands. This is not a jury trial. It's a bench trial. And a verdict could come down early this year, but then again, it could be several months from now. So we are awaiting the verdict in that case, while there are many other antitrust cases brewing, including one against Amazon and an investigation in the grocery store merger between Albertsons and Kroger, and whether the Federal Trade Commission and other federal authorities might get involved in that merger. So there's a whole lot going on in the antitrust front. It sounds like a very boring area of law, but it's something that taxpayers need to be concerned about, because not only are they spending a lot of money on these cases at the government level, but taxpayers can be harmed when innovation gets slowed by antitrust action and companies say, this isn't worth the investment because the government is going to come after us if we're successful. Well, that's a lot of innovation that never happens. Innovations that governments can use to become more efficient and save tax dollars. I mean, think cloud data storage. That's something that's come out of the internet and tech revolution that governments have been able to take advantage of to cut their costs and keep taxes from rising as fast as they have.
Taking a look at all these antitrust cases here, Pete, do you see the federal government becoming more active in this area?
Oh, yes, definitely so. You can tell in the budget requests for the Department of Justice and the Federal Trade Commission, which are the two main federal entities pursuing antitrust cases. They asked for massive increases under the Biden administration, 20, even 30% annually, more than $500 million worth of budget that both entities could use to create all kinds of mischief in the private sector. And I know that conservatives in some cases wonder whether these tech companies are on their side and whether they're politicized to the point where conservatives don't have a voice on these platforms. That's an important question to ask, but an equally important question is, do we really want to give more power to the federal government, especially the Biden administration's two antitrust entities, to go after U.S. companies when competitor companies abroad, especially in China, are effectively benefiting whenever we hamstring our own companies with higher taxes and more legal actions? I would think not.
We are talking with Pete Sepp from the National Taxpayers Union. We're talking about a case the federal government has, an antitrust case of sorts, against Google. And looking at this case, you mentioned, Pete, there's been a lot of maneuvering on it. The federal judge has thrown some of the charges out. The remaining case, how strong do you see it as being?
I think it's fairly weak in a number of senses. And the biggest one is that the government has kept trying to argue that a deal between Apple and Google, whereby Apple pays some kind of remuneration for having Google feature its search engine, or Google paying that remuneration to have the search engine on Apple's devices, is some kind of unseemly relationship. Well, that's what advertisers do in the retail sector all the time. I mean, it's how you get your brand preferentially displayed on shelves. And in any case, Apple was saying during the trial, well, Google's search engine was the best one. And in any case, it only takes a few clicks now to change your search engine preference. It's not like the old days, you know, pre-internet or even early internet, where you had to jump through all kinds of hoops to change your computer's or your device's settings. It's pretty easy now. And so what we have here is the government essentially arguing that, well, competitors are being harmed by this practice, and a very weak case that consumers are actually being harmed. And that's important because for the better part of 40 years, most antitrust policy has been governed by what's called the consumer welfare standard. The government doesn't step in and try to mediate between companies unless consumers are actually being harmed.
The National Taxpayers Union here, Pete, has recently conducted a survey of attorneys general to determine their priorities. Want to tell us a little bit about what that survey found?
This was a poll in Pennsylvania by Fabrizio Lee and Associates, and we asked the question, so what are your priorities as a voter for the attorney general? What should the attorney general be spending taxpayer resources on? What types of activities? And it turns out upwards of two-thirds of respondents decided that attorneys general ought to be focusing on the basics, prosecuting companies that gouge consumers during and after disasters, prosecuting criminals, that seems pretty obvious, cracking down on human trafficking, protecting consumers from fraud. The vast majority of Pennsylvanians say those kinds of functions are what they expect from their attorney general. When asked if investigating companies for antitrust violations should be a priority, barely 5% of all of those polled said, yes, that should be a priority. That's roughly within the margin of error of the poll. So this is not a priority among Pennsylvania taxpayers. And I think the attorney general in Pennsylvania, Attorney General Henry, ought to be reading these results and saying, I think I need to prioritize my job.
And we will point out that the Office of Attorney General in Pennsylvania is one of three statewide constitutional or so-called row offices that are up for election by voters statewide this year. The Attorney General's office, you mentioned Michelle Henry, no relation to yours truly, but Michelle Henry is not running. She was appointed to fill the unexpired term of Josh Shapiro when he became governor. So we have an open seat for Attorney General and a lot of maneuvering going on among the parties as to who those nominees will be. But going forward here, Pete, whether it's with Attorney General Michelle Henry or a new Attorney General after the first of the year, are there other tech cases that are likely going to come into play?
Oh, yes. There is a case against Amazon that the Federal Trade Commission is already pursuing. There, again, the commission is arguing that Amazon, among online superstores, is trying to corner the market. Well, the trouble is the Federal Trade Commission has created a whole new category of stores in order to contend that Amazon has a dominant position. That's kind of ridiculous. The federal government will almost always have other tech companies in its sights, like Facebook. It has lost in court against Facebook before. It has settled and lost in court against Google before. It will likely do so against other tech companies because the further that FTC Chair Lina Khan and the DOJ's Josh Cantor decide to veer away from that consumer welfare standard I spoke about, the more they do that, the more they are going to go into uncharted legal territory that judges are not going to appreciate. And the defenses for the companies are going to be able to just pick those apart.
Pete Sepp, president of the National Taxpayers Union. And Pete, as we wrap up here, tell us a bit about the National Taxpayers Union and also where can folks go on the web to learn more?
We're a nonprofit, nonpartisan citizen group founded all the way back in 1969 to work for lower, simpler, and fairer taxes, less wasteful government spending, and accountability from public officials at all levels. We can find out more about NTU at our website, NTU, our initials for National Taxpayers Union, NTU.org.
Pete Sepp of the National Taxpayers Union. Pete, good talking with you. Thank you.
Absolutely. Take care.
From lost hikers to missing children, Special Unit 66 is there to conduct search and rescue operations. It is a unique service, as Joe Geiger learns from Chief Mark Saladay, who is in this month's Community Benefit Spotlight.
Thank you, Loman, and thank you, Mark, for being a guest on the radio program today.
Yeah, absolutely. Glad I could be here.
You're involved with one of those special organizations that helps make this country great in terms of the volunteerism and the kind of work that you accomplish. And if you would share with our listeners a little bit, what was the motivation for starting this organization?
In Pennsylvania as a whole, search and rescue isn't recognized as an emergency service, so it lacks drastically across the state. So organizations like ourselves have one goal in mind, and that's to help those of loved ones that are missing, whether it's a dementia person or it's a lost hunter or a lost kid, whatever it may be. And we wanted to give back and try to help those loved ones get back home.
Has anybody explained to you why you're not considered a charitable organization?
We are a 501c3 nonprofit, but in the Commonwealth, state doesn't recognize search and rescue as that emergency service. And that's all Commonwealth states. That's not just Pennsylvania.
Talk a little bit about how you got involved, how you started this organization, and what your biggest challenges were in getting it started.
So I've been embedded with the fire service and the public safety service since I've been born. My parents have grown up in the fire service. And I've been was in law enforcement for 15 years, and always took interest to the canine work and helping others. And the county, Lebanon County specifically, came to me a few years ago and asked about starting a search and rescue organization up that would hold members, have bylaws, have SOGs, and have a good organization for them to use as a resource in Lebanon County to help the fire departments and police departments in the aid of missing persons. So I started the organization up and continued to grow it to help the fire department and the police department organizations in the county. And inadvertently, then we also get called out of the county as well. So we do about a two-hour radius around us that we do go help other people as well. One thing that's very interesting with the search and rescue organization is there are people that want to volunteer and help other people out. They just have good hearts and they want to give back to the community, but they don't want to run into a burning building. They don't want to deal with somebody that's hurt in a car and entrapped or something like that. So we find a lot of people are firefighters or EMS personnel that work with us or even law enforcement, but we also find a lot of like avid hikers, people that just like the outdoors, that want to give back and want to take their knowledge of being an outdoorsman and give it back to the community. So we find a lot of those type of people on our unit as well.
So working dogs can be trained to do all kinds of things. Specifically, your dogs are trained to search and look for missing people. What else might they do?
We have canines that are made for tracking purposes, which are going to take a specific scent and just look for that scent and track on that specific scent. We had a lot of great finds this year alone in Lebanon County, actually, as well. But we also have canines that can do cadaver work, which is deceased. You know, and unfortunately, nobody really is excited to find a deceased person, but it still gives the family closure, you know, so it's still important to be able to find that person.
This is Joe Geiger on the Lincoln Radio Program. My guest today is Chief Mark Saladay with Special Unit 66 out of Lebanon County. What does a typical day look like for your organization? Break it down in terms of the amount of training you do, maintenance of the animals, and actually getting a call to go out.
Start with the animals first. The canine handlers all own their own dog. They all train their own dog. The Special Unit 66 is an organization that trains together and works together with the dogs, but we don't just give us your dog and we train it. You know, and that's a lot of misconception that we do get with newcomers coming on board. Working your dog is an everyday occurrence, from obedience work to making sure it understands behavior well, because we do a lot of PR events and things of that nature where it has to be well behaved, but then also have the drive to continue to be out in the field for an hour, two, four, five, six, whatever, how many hours that may be, to have the drive to keep working. So for the canine side and the canine handler, there's definitely more work than any other team member that's in the organization, because they have to work their dog and deal with their dog every single day. For other members, you have standard trainings that we have, standard meetings that you have. And then needless to say, we all have full-time jobs. You know, this is all volunteer. working full-time jobs and then responding at the drop of a hat when the pager goes off to respond, which could be any hours of the day. Our last one was Christmas morning at 2:30 a.m. for a dementia person that walked away, and we were out for about 4.5 hours in that Christmas morning. Got home Christmas morning and had Christmas with the family, you know, so we were up all day. We didn't sleep at all, but we're willing to sacrifice that time, and so are the members, to give back. It's just what we do. It's who we are.
Again, that's commendable, and hopefully a lot of people are listening to the program because for your organization and like and similar organizations across the Commonwealth, what's the percentage of success rates when you go out on a search?
Fairly good, actually. There's very little searches that we walk away from where we haven't found the person or we have to go back. There are some calls where, depending on what the situation is, where we will search and we will determine that the person is still moving, they're okay. Some people just need to clear their mind, and sometimes moving them isn't good. So there are cases where we have stopped searches for the better of the lost person because that was just the right thing to do. And then we either reorganize maybe a day or two later if they haven't resurfaced on their own and go back out and start operations back up. So there's a lot of strategic history of what we look at on past calls and bring them into the current situation, because historically with lost people, that is one thing that doesn't change. Dementia people usually are always found in a certain area. Missing children are usually always found. So there is a strategic game plan that we do when we do go out. It's not just like we're just randomly putting people out to try to walk and find somebody.
So, Mark, at the end of the day, how do you know you're making a difference?
This year alone, we ran 28 calls, I think it was this year, and we had a 95% success rate. So that's where you know you're making a difference, where you know that you're tracking and you're finding that loved one. We found dementia folks this year. We found lost kids. We found some unfortunate suicides with the cadaver dog. And all of those were success stories on our end, which brought that person home to their family one way or another. So that's what keeps you going. That's what's the motivation to continue the organization and keep it moving forward.
So this is Joe Geiger on the Lincoln Radio Program. My guest today is Chief Mark Saladay. He's the chief of the Special Unit 66, a search and rescue team in Lebanon, Pennsylvania. Mark, I appreciate you being a guest on the program, and I appreciate the work that you're doing for the community.
Thank you for recognizing us and getting the word out there to the public of who we are, what we do, and the importance of search and rescue.
Back to you, Loman.
Tall fences and wide gates. That is the policy solution to stemming the flow of illegal immigration over the nation's southern border. Emily Green from Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania explains on this Lincoln Radio Journal commentary.
Each time you turn on the news, you're likely to see the coverage of the chaos at the southern border. It's no surprise that this developing crisis is receiving media attention regularly. The numbers speak for themselves. Since February of 2021, there have been 5,815,600 apprehensions at the southern border. To put that into context, from 2021 to 2023, Border Patrol experienced 1.35 million more apprehensions than they had in the past 10 years. Simply put, this is a national security crisis. Bipartisan policymakers led to this crisis, but bipartisanship can create sound policy solutions to address the safety issues Americans face each and every day due to the lack of inaction from the current administration. As we turn the calendar to 2024, the November elections draw near. From an electoral standpoint, immigration remains an issue top of mind for likely voters. According to polling published late last year by Fox News, 80% of voters of all political ideologies classify the situation at the southern border as either an emergency or major problem. Moreover, earlier this year, CBS News released a poll demonstrating that 68% of Americans disapprove of President Joe Biden's handling of the situation, which is 4% higher than the poll released by the Wall Street Journal last November. regardless of the intent behind voters' concerns with the crisis at the southern border. For example, most Democrats cite humanitarian concerns, whereas Republicans cite national security. There is vast room for improvement in fixing the system. There is consensus from both sides of the political aisle. We need leadership that will address the crisis head-on in short order. Last June, Americans for Prosperity Foundation Pennsylvania had the opportunity to tour the border along the Rio Grande in McAllen, Texas. As we stood by the river, Chief Chris Clem, former Yuma Sector Border Security Chief, shared startling statistics about his experience over the past 4 years. From 2019 to 2022, when Chief Clem retired, his region in southwest Arizona saw an increase in arrests by over 300,000 year over year. What was the driving force behind this increase in arrests? Ineffective policymaking, such as President Biden's arbitrary barring of immigrant deportation for his first 100 days in office. Americans for Prosperity believes that we can solve the crisis continuing to develop at our southern border, and there's a pathway to do this in a bipartisan manner. First, we must address the humanitarian crisis at the border by increased security, better technology, and reforming the asylum system. Washington must also cut regulations that punish legal immigrants and prevent businesses from sponsoring individuals that make up a critical part of our workforce. Finally, policymakers must replace the unlawful Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, or DACA, program with one that promotes certainty, transparency, and accountability for individuals who grew up in the United States illegally, though not through fault of their own. Border security and protecting human dignity do not need to be mutually exclusive. We can provide tall fences and wide gates, metaphorically speaking, and promote national security and opportunity. Congress must take swift action now to address this crisis, and you can scale your voice to let your member of Congress know that you want to see tall fences and wide gates, promote national security and opportunity. Learn more at AmericansForProsperity.org. Again, that's AmericansForProsperity.org. This is Emily Green, Deputy State Director with Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania.
If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. And it is time once again to start talking about the Pennsylvania Leadership Conference, which will be April 4th through 6th at the Penn Harris Hotel and Convention Center near Harrisburg. This year's featured dinner speaker will be Judge Jeanine Pirro of Fox News The Five. She will be joined by a wide range of state and national speakers and panelists. The three-day event will also include an expanded schedule of workshops. The Pennsylvania Leadership Conference is the nation's largest and longest-running. This is the 35th year of state-based conservative activist conferences in the nation. Get complete details and register for this year's Pennsylvania Leadership Conference at paleadershipconference.org. That's paleadershipconference.org. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, and the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania. We'll be right back.